Hello, everyone, and welcome to the new episode of Constructive Criticism. I am your guest host this week, Mason, and I'm joined by the only man in the world that I know with the last name Hinderacher, Michael Hinderacher. Michael, how you doing?
That's such a good intro, man. I'm doing great. I'm doing even better now. I'm glad that I am the only Hinderacher in your life.
Yeah, the only Hinderacher I need, too. So if I ever go to Utah, I need to avoid your family and everything like the plague. But
yeah, I mean, fortunately, I only have like 4 family members in Utah, so it's probably not going to be that hard.
Okay, so you're saying I need to be ever vigilant then, because they could be out here with me. I thought I just had to be safe in Utah.
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine it's like a super common last name. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, no, I call you Hinderacher A because I always think I'm going to misspell Michael, and B because like no one else is named Hinderacher. So if there's ever another Michael, I can call them Michael. You're Hinderacher.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of Michaels. Like Michael's a real common name, but less people named Hinderacher. So.
I also think it's a powerful last name. It's like Hinderacher. Boom. You don't agree?
Okay. I don't know.
You know what we can both agree on? The great service at Oasis Games. You can get all the cards you need from Oasis Games, and you use the code CCMTG for 4% back on store credit, and hashtag would that be good on your first purchase for 15% off.
I think it's just would that be good. I think you don't need the hashtag.
You don't need
that.
Oh, okay. Well, would that be good? Try whichever one. It'll pop up with the code that works right. But you can do that on your first order to get 15% off, and that's a lot. You know, if you're going to buy Jace the Mind Sculptor, so like, what, $100, $120? Is that right, Michael?
Oh, there's so much. I don't even know what they're at, but they are outrageous.
It's like $500 for a playset, so you get more than $50 back if you use the code there. So
it's enough that, you know, you will only have no money, not need to mortgage a kidney.
Well, it will basically buy you a GP entry or an SEG entry because of how much it costs. It's like a free roll.
Is that a good thing?
It's a thing, Michael. I was never told to say good things. Fair. I was told to say things about Oasis Games. But there's only good things to say because how great it is. Yeah. And then you can also check out our other sponsor, the Mana Base, for sealed product and singles as well. They're based out of Canada. So when you go there, you might see your card is way more expensive than somewhere else. That's because it's Canadian dollars and their money isn't real. So they just put numbers up and they're like, that seems about right. And it's your job to figure it out. So... all jokes aside, though, you can check out the Mana Base. They like to support up and coming content. Michael found that quite funny. And you can get some cards from them, get sealed products. That's something that Oasis Games doesn't do. So if you're trying to practice for your RPTQ that's coming up because you're not like Michael Hinderacher and you're a Silver Pro, soon to be Gold, when he spikes GP Memphis here, and you need to practice Limited, you can get the sealed product there.
So, I mean, I think everyone needs to practice Limited. Limited is so hard.
It is hard. Yeah, and if you really want to practice, you can always check out our sister podcast, Limited Time Only, with other Silver Pro from Utah, Danny Cathro. So,
oh, man, that's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, I know, right? Danny Cathro once 3-0'd a PT draft, so can you say that,
that's
Michael?
That's true. I don't know.
You don't remember if you 3-0'd a PT draft? I feel like, no offense to you, you've admitted that Limited isn't your best. So I feel like you'd remember it.
I'm trying to think of what my best... overall PT record for Limited is, and it's probably not great. It's certainly not better than 4-2.
I was gonna say, yeah, I feel like you told me this before. It was like 4-2, and you're like, yeah, we did it. So
yeah, that's entirely possible. I could imagine being excited about that.
Yeah, I think that's a completely reasonable thing to be excited about. If I 4-2'd my part of Limited, I'd be quite happy because I'm terrible at Limited. So
yeah, it's really hard. Yeah, it is really, really hard.
And it turns out when you play against pros all the time, it's also harder. So
yeah, my experience with Limited is really jaded because I never play it for fun. I basically only play it at Pro Tours.
Mm-hmm. So,
my GP Limited results are great. I think I have like 2 top 16s, a top 32, and a top 64 in like 5.
Yeah, because you dream crushed that guy from top 8. I remember.
Oh yeah, that was great. But other than that, like the only time I ever draft really is, you know, practicing for PT and PT. So my feelings about Limited are always that it's the hardest format.
Well, it probably is a lot of the time, if we're being honest, at the PT. It's probably where the skill advantage happens the most and whatnot.
It feels like that, certainly.
Yep. But you know what's another way to get a skill advantage, Michael? It's to become an awesome patron of Constructed Criticism. We have 2 new patrons we want to shout out. We're going to give a shout out to Jason T and Jaron W. I don't know why you and Spencer have such a hard time saying these patron names. That was super easy.
Yeah, I feel like it's... I don't really know what gave me so many problems last week. Maybe it had to do with the name not being Jaron or Jason.
Yeah, maybe.
I hope that one of their names is pronounced differently, just so you can feel the pain.
Just like he's like, yeah, my name's not actually Jason. It's a silent A. It's Jason, but it happens all the time. Don't worry about it. No, but thank you so much for being a patron of the show. The show will always be free. But I think with these patrons, we are exactly $1 away from bringing back Card of the Week. But we already brought it back because we count sponsorship money and stuff like that. And I'm, by the way, super hyped to talk about Card of the Week this week. We'll get there soon. But we just want to bring that up. We have another goal pretty soon for... Actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I don't know if Spencer updated it, but we're adding a goal thing that's pretty exciting soon. So, but either way,
I don't even know the goal is so exciting. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, well, I remember Spencer talked about it, and he's like, "I'm not sure if I want to do that or not," and I don't want to be the guy that says it on air, and then Spencer gets mad at me, and he's like, "Mason, I tell you to fill in 1 week, and you just throw everything in the wind." But no, but seriously, we appreciate the patron money so much. Thank you for feeling like we gave enough value to you for you to give some value to us. But one of the rewards of being a patron, Michael, is they get to ask a Patreon question. So. Michael, would you like to read this question?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the question says, how could you tell when you have a good or bad matchup against something? How do you know when a matchup is good or bad for you versus your slight bias because you know how to navigate the matchup or you being unfamiliar with how the matchup is? I think this is an interesting question, and a lot of it gets down to sort of why we're interested in playing at the highest level we can, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily do a lot of good to get a bunch of playtesting against players who aren't playing decks well. I think Magic Online competitive leagues are a great outlet for this because you have something at stake. It doesn't necessarily have to be a ton, but there's something at stake.
Mm-hmm.
But the best way to test a matchup is always with a friend or like having sort of playing, even like kind of face up to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think just trying to make sure that both players are playing optimally as opposed to necessarily trying to win playtesting games can give you a much better idea of what your matchups actually look like.
Yeah, I really like that. Something that I've seen people do here, especially when the format's like brand new, like when a rotation happens and it's bigger and everyone's learning all the cards, is they'll play face up for a while on both sides just to make sure nothing's getting missed. Because the goal of playtesting isn't to beat your friends. It's for everyone to improve, right? And get better. So
yeah.
That kind of stuff can be really helpful there.
You have to be a little bit careful playing face up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are like pretty obvious issues with that. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not the way you test very much, right? But like for the first couple of days, I think it's fine.
Well, or if you're really unfamiliar with a matchup, just getting a feeling, like having someone who is better at the other archetype than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to learn how your matchup against Mono Red goes, having them play a couple of games face up where, you know, you kind of ignore the information but still get to see how they're, like, sequencing things can be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So, but how can you know, Michael? So, like, you and I are both preparing for GP Memphis, right? And I think it's no secret that, like, Mono Red is the deck a lot of people are really looking at as to be, like, the perceived best deck right now, and you look at MDGO and stuff like that. So how can you tell if your matchup's really good or not against a deck like Mono Red, for example, in Standard?
Like, well,
I mean, it's hard.
I think a lot of it is testing,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of it is like looking at event results and seeing if they maybe back up what you're thinking. And if they don't back up what you're thinking, then either going back to the drawing board or trying to figure out why what you're thinking is different than what seems to be happening.
Okay.
And again, I think that like playing with someone better than you can really be helpful in this kind of sense. I think that playing. Even if you're just playing on like Magic Online, playing with someone over your shoulder can be really helpful just to give you sort of more looks at the board and give you more thought process about exactly what's happening and why it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think though, like ultimately matchup evaluation is a really difficult skill and it's something you have to try to cultivate.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. I think one thing people would like to do is say like a percentage of a matchup, which is like kind of helpful for, I think, for like people getting an understanding, but it really doesn't matter. It's not like you're saying hard numbers. You're just getting a feel for it. And after you play for a while, you get a feel like, is my deck going to line up well, right? Like, is this white, green, the Thwarted, the Council deck really that good against red, right?
Well, or sort of what has to happen.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Like, what does the game have to look like? Is that a thing I can consistently do? Does my deck work towards that goal the whole time? All those things are really good. And I wanted to say, I really do agree with like, I think one of the biggest thing that helped me this last year getting better at Magic and, you know, always improving and whatnot, but has been playing on Modo. I think it has really helped because you play against a wide swath of people who, like you said, I think you said this on a podcast once, it was like you're like gambling, right? Everyone's playing for money, so everyone's going to try. No one's going to, you know, not try or whatever. So that can be really helpful. I'm sorry, continue.
And more than not trying, like, the problem with playing against players who aren't very good is that they're not going to try. Mm-hmm. The problem is that trying isn't necessarily enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about intent. It's just about ability. And if someone is willing to bet you essentially $12 or whatever that they can go, you know, 3-2, 4-1, or 5-0, they clearly at least believe they're clearly classifying themselves
as someone that can do that.
As something, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just want to end it on this, is that I agree 100% with the, like, over-the-shoulder MTGO. One thing that I do a lot with people is they're, like, play us a Modo League, and I'll watch. I do this with the Constructive Criticism Worldwide a lot. Me and Caroline play, like, a lot of leagues, and I watch, and she plays, and we'll talk through plays. I do the same thing with a local guy named Trey, and I try and do it when I can with other people as well. But I find that really helpful, and it's another way to, like, maximize testing, where, like, you're making sure and you're able to watch that kind of stuff. So I really like that.
Yeah.
I know that you do that some too, right?
Definitely. I play probably about 80% of the Magic I play with two people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even more than that percentage. But I think just having someone to talk, it helps with, like, trying to figure out why you're making the plays you're making.
Yep. Definitely agree. Well, I hope that answered your question. I hope you got something out of it. And let's move on to our always improving moment. Because on the show, we really do believe that if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And this week's always improving moment, it's going to start with you, Michael. How have you been improving?
All right. Well, I've just been grinding standard. I have played probably I've played an unreasonable number of leagues in the last week or two trying to figure out what I want to play at this Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. And although I'm not there yet, I feel like I'm making some progress, and I'm excited. Like, it's always a good time to get to play competitive Magic, and Grand Prix are really fun.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting for sure. Yeah, so my always improving moment is kind of the same. I've been playing a good bit of the leagues. I'm going to try and get a league or two in the minimum a night these last couple of weeks. While taking care of other stuff, which, you know, isn't as much as Silver Pro Michael Hinderacher, probably. But, you know, I'm doing what I can. And I've been trying this whole season since Standard started to try and find a deck that I'm comfortable with and I think is good. And I've been flipping and flopping around decks, as some people would say, and just trying out weird stuff. Like, I played Bant Approach at a PBDQ this last weekend to a second-place finish. I've played a couple... I did really well in a couple leagues with it, but ultimately it's like, I just don't think I want to play that deck, so... Even though I'm getting good results with the deck, you know, being able to separate that from what I think is going to actually do well at a GP is kind of like my always improving moment for the week.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, there are some decks that I've had a lot of success with on Magic Online just because I think the density of red mm-hmm. is lower, but they're not decks I would be comfortable playing against mono red 6+ times with.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time signing up a deck that I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. I agree 100%. That's definitely what it feels like.
But people just get burned out, right? Like, you're not going to play, you know, 40 to 50% of your matches against mono red because people just want to try new things.
Definitely.
Like, it makes sense.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on to our deck doctor this week. So this is another reward for being a patron, Michael, in case you didn't know. We get to go over your deck on the show and talk about it. And I am going to say, so Spencer was unable to make the show tonight. There was something that came up. So I wasn't able to get a hold of him and get a hold of the actual deck list. But the one we got said 60, but it only popped up with 58 cards. So I think it would be kind of interesting for us to talk about maybe two cards we would add to it as well. But would you like to read the deck?
I like that. Yeah. Okay, so this is 23 lands, I believe.
Yep.
4 Dragon Skull Summit, 4 Canyon Slough, 3 Field of Ruin, 1 Ifnir Deadlands, 6 Mountain, 5 Swamp. 4 Gifted Aetherborn, 2 Ravenous Chupacabra, 4 Rekindling Phoenix, 4 Glorybringer, 2 Magma Spray, 1 Fatal Push, 4 Abrade, 2 Unlicensed Disintegration, 2 Vraska's Contempt, 2 Sweltering Suns, 3 Treasure Map, 3 Chandra Torch of Defiance, and 2 Liliana Death's Majesty. In the sideboard, there are 4 Duress, 1 Argyle's Bloodfast, 3 Moment of Craving, 2 Bantu's Last Reckoning, 2 Sweltering Suns, and 3 Lost Legacy.
All right, so let's start with, what do you love about this deck, Michael?
Okay, I like that this deck knows what it is trying to do. We're trying to play a bunch of removal spells and then fly over the top of mono red.
Mm-hmm. I like that too. I just like your game plan. It's point click, bird, Glorybringer, click, kill you. Like, yes. That's your game plan.
Right, and you have Aetherborns in the early game. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, in a lot of ways, this deck just makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. It has one thing I like in a deck is, like, when you can look at it and you're like, what's this deck's game plan? And it's very clear, just like we talked about. So with that being said, is there any changes that you would like to make to this? Is there anything that seems a little clunky, anything like that, any cards you'd like to see? Because also we're missing two cards, so we get to add two cards, Michael.
Right. Okay, so there are some things I'm concerned about. I don't think this deck has enough lands. I would not be surprised if the other two cards were lands.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't think this deck has close to enough black sources to actually play Gifted Aetherborn.
All right, well, what if we added two Ifnir Deadlands? So we have some spell lands, get some black in there.
Sure, but then you would still only be on 16 black sources?
That's true.
That's, like, probably still a little light. I haven't, you know, I don't have the math memorized off the top of my head, but for second black source by turn two, I would guess 16 is
low.
Quite low. And that's assuming they're both black lands. Mainly, I like Field of Ruin hypothetically, but I think Field of Ruin Gifted Aetherborn with 11 basics is just going to be tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think you could probably trim there. I do like the idea of Field of Ruin in the deck, though. I mean, you're a two-color deck, and you know you can get some Ezcantas, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't hate it, because I would imagine Control is probably your worst matchup.
Mm-hmm.
At least with the main deck setup.
It seems that way from the sideboard.
Yeah, but I can't... I think it's going to be tricky to cast Gifted Aetherborn.
Consistently on two.
Yeah, I'm also not really quite sure what we're doing with Liliana Death's Majesty in this deck. Like, okay. We don't have any way to... There's no way to, like, loot through. Like, so this card has seen some play recently in these, like, blue-black mid-range decks where you have a lot of cards that are kind of filtering through your deck between Chart of Course and Champion of Wits. It makes a little more sense in those style of decks just because it can actually regularly minus the turn you play it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing that's going to happen much here. And, I mean, Liliana Death's Majesty has not exactly been an all-star in Standard to this point. So I'm a little unsure about that one.
There's also the synergies with the blue-black deck, where, like, milling Champion of Wits and the tick-up is quite good.
Right,
and
right,
here you have
yeah.
no real synergies, so that part is a little disheartening as well, I agree. I want to talk about something that I'm sure everyone kind of perked their ears at when you read it. Three Lost Legacies. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I am not a fan of Lost Legacy, mostly because I don't believe that people should play the card approach at Second Sun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would imagine that's what it's a hedge towards.
Yeah, they have so many. I imagine they just named Disallow and weird stuff against Control decks and Scare of God. I don't know. They have so many.
I mean, you can do things like that. I don't know why.
I don't know either. But I'm trying because it's weird to me because there are so many Lost Legacies.
Yeah, like the third Lost Legacy is like. Definitely at least one too many.
Yeah. I would love like an Argul's Bloodfast, a Dream Stealer, like anything else if you want to be control. Well, did you just Dream Stealer? I'll end this podcast.
Dream Stealer is... I've played a Dream Stealer before in my life, I'll admit, but that card has always been
amazing.
Pretty bad.
You're right. I don't know. Maybe I've just had a lot of good luck with the card, but I have just destroyed people's hands with that card a lot of the time.
Sure.
That hits me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just lucky. I'm not also Silver Pro.
It might be better in this style of deck just because you actually have so few creatures.
It would also work well with Liliana's.
Kind of.
You got a brute because you mill it and then you buy it back. It's a combo.
Kind of. Five drop, six drop. Like.
Yeah, that's called building a good curve, Michael.
Your opponent casts Approach and you discard their hand every turn and then they draw another one and kill you. Yeah.
Michael, you know what? We have our three Lost Legacies. Well, two Lost Legacies. Sorry. We have two Lost Legacies. What do you need?
I'm
trying to sculpt a game plan here.
I don't know. I I think these kind of decks look pretty good. I might try, like, Azura's Gateway or something. I think if you want to play this much spot removal in the main deck, it really helps to have, like, a good, consistent source of filtering.
Yeah. Can I just say that card has overperformed? I think we both ripped that off in, like, the set review, I'm pretty sure. I think you were higher on it than I was. You were like, this could do something, but that was a card that's really impressed.
It seems at least maybe fine. I mean, it depends on what you're looking for, right? Like, yeah.
I don't know. It's just a card that I thought would see, like, no play in the current standard, and, like, maybe when rotation happened we see something, and it has actually just seen some fringe play, which is more than I thought.
It's a tiny bit of play. Yeah, I mean, it's, like, still pretty bad against a Braid, you know, which is kind of the problem with Treasure Map, too.
Yeah.
But
whatever.
You know, here we are.
Yep. There we are. So, Michael, what do you think this deck stands in the format?
It seems okay. I worry that your mono red matchup isn't going to be as good as you'd think. Like, you still seem kind of soft to Hazoret. Only two attempts, like, scares me a little bit.
Do you maybe like turning Unlicensed into contempts?
Maybe. I don't know that you can actually do that. Just, like, the curve starts getting kind of out of control then. If we're going to play, like, Ravenous Chupacabra and Rekindling Phoenix and Wrathless Tempt and Chandra, like...
And Dreamsteel, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know that that's, like, a real-life decision you get to make, but I certainly... playing less than four Vraska's Contempts in your Vraska's Contempt deck scares me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. So it's kind of funny. Today, like, some friends were like, if you had to, like, rank the top eight cards in Standard, what would your rankings be? And I was like, I'm not sure, but I know I'm putting Vraska's Contempt at, like, one or two. That's just a card, like, I'm very happy to play and I'm really excited to play and pulls me towards black decks. So I am scared to only see two. But he also had, like, I'm sorry, they had, like, a million spot removal, so...
It goes both ways. It's just that, like, none of that spot removal has text if there's a Hazoret in play, right?
That's true. And the deck is kind of weak to Planeswalkers. But I do like the starting shell of this, and I would be very interested. I don't have the name of whose deck tech this is, but throughout there, I'd be very interested if you have any updated version, anything like that, if you find success with it. Let us know. I want to know. Post it on the Constructed Critics group if you're a patron of $5 or more. All right, Michael, are you excited for this next point?
I am.
This is card of the week, Michael. So every week on the show, we like to give away a card that we think is doing well, we're going to do well, or something like that. And the last week, I joked that we'd do Jace the Mind Sculptor. And Spencer was like, let's not do that. Instead, let's do Bloodbraid Elf. So card of the week this week is Bloodbraid Elf. I'm not sure how many we're giving out. I imagine it's four, might be one. If you win card of the week, you'll find out you got some Bloodbraid Elves. Michael? Have you been looking at Modern at all? I know I have. You're like, I don't know, because sometimes if their cards are more expensive.
It could be four. It might be one. What a good answer.
I'm just going to say four on the podcast now. There. Now, since we're saying four.
Oh, that's so expensive. They're like $10 a piece.
Two. How about that? No, but
I couldn't tell you. That's not my decision to make.
Yeah, I know. I'm just joking.
But Bloodbraid Elf seems pretty sweet. I really like the red-green Eldrazi deck with it that I've seen Tim post a couple of times. I would imagine it like is probably good in Jund. I saw someone play a Death Shadow list.
Yeah, I played a league with that.
Was it good?
It was kind of good. Caroline, throughout the... Caroline is very high on the Traverse Shadow list. She really enjoys... Maybe she's not high. Maybe she just enjoys playing them. But I find that we're playing those a lot when we do leagues. And I am not as big on the old Traverse Shadow as everyone else. But I will say we cascaded into Kolaghan's Command, and that was the truth.
That sounds gross.
It was like first time. It was like, boom, Kolaghan's Command, kill your thing, buy back a Death Shadow. And I was like, all right, well, if we're going to do this every time, I'm game. So
sold, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, because you didn't get to give your hot take on Jace and everything. I know you don't really care that much about hot takes or whatnot. But
kind of true.
Yeah, I mean, it is the truth. But I'm going to ask you the question anyways. Do you think we're going to be seeing Jace rebanded in a little bit, or do you think Bloodbraid Elf and the rest of the format is going to chip
in? I don't know.
You don't know? It's a good answer.
I think the biggest problem with Jace in general is that blue just kind of sucks.
Yeah?
Like, I'm down to play Jace. I don't want to play any other blue cards in this format.
Okay. Well,
pretty much ever.
So what you're telling me is we're going to play Teemer Moon, and we're going to play Jace and Bloodbraid Elf together.
I mean, I just don't want to play Blood Moon either. I don't think Blood Moon's a very good
Why can't my fun decks be fun, Michael? Why do you?
I don't want to get into why you shouldn't play Blood Moon decks, but
yeah, no, that's fine.
I don't think, like, the quality of cantrips is pretty bad. The quality of spot removal is okay. The quality of sweepers is quite poor.
Seer Vision's isn't it kind of better now too? Because you get to scry away half your brainstorm.
I mean, you can like. I don't know. My feeling in general is that the blue shells are not so powerful that Jace just puts them over the top, and he doesn't necessarily solve the problems that the decks really have. Like, it's obviously an insanely powerful card, and it will make the decks better, but I don't know that you go from, like, Grixis being kind of a fringe deck and blue-white being kind of a fringe deck to, you know, these being, like, the two best decks. I think it's... Obviously, Jace is great. I was talking to Matt the other day, and he was like... I forget exactly what he said, but the gist of it was basically... So, Jace doesn't have any bad matchups. He just has bad positions. But, like, any time that... Basically, if you're at parity, I would draw Jace the Mind Sculptor in any deck on any board.
Yeah.
As long as you're at parity. Any deck, any matchup, Jace is great. But... Anytime you're behind, it just doesn't do anything. And, like, in Legacy, you have, like, Force of Will to pitch it when it's clear that it's not going to do anything. You can brainstorm it away when it's clear it's not going to do anything. Like, you have so much more control over drawing Jace in good situations. Whereas in Modern, like, you just don't have the same luxury, right? If your opponent, like, plays a Goblin Guide and you've kept a hand that is looking, you know, like, to try to play a Jace, you just mulligan to six.
Yeah, it's true. Very true. All right, well, I want to wrap it up real quick with Bloodbraid Elf decks. Michael, I'm going to get your hot take, fascinating or not, let me know. Red-Green Ponza of Bloodbraid Elf. Where are we at?
No.
No? All right, well.
No, you're going to keep casting Arbor Elves off your Bloodbraid Elf and just be sad.
Wrong. I'm going to play Arbor Elf, because now there's two out of my deck, and I'm going to play Bloodbraid Elf, and I'm going to go Stone Rain. I'm going to go Stone Rain again of turn. They're going to have no lands, and I'm going to attack them for three.
Then they'll draw land, and...
Oh, no. Everything's falling apart.
You'll have to play a Blood Moon, and everything will fall to pieces.
I want that deck to be good, because I don't like it. I like it when my opponents don't have lands, but I don't think the deck is good. I was hoping you would confirm my bad choices, but instead you are a good friend and an honest person.
I don't know. I just think, like, signing up... Deciding that you're going to register Stone Rain is just, like, not something I can get on board with.
That's fair.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, if my game plan ends up being trying to, like, Ghost Quarter someone, or, you know, I sideboard in a Molten Rain and burn or something, fine. But I'm not, like, registering a bunch of Stone Rains.
So you're telling it's me not, four it, Stone Rain, four Molten Rain, four Fulminator Mage, four Bloodbraid Elf is not something I can get
it's you. It's not going down like that. No.
All right.
You can play that deck. I'm not losing with that pile.
All right. Well, I'm going to play that deck. I'm going to get paired against you. I'm going to beat you and your stupid Jace the Mind Sculptor decks. That's not true. I can't lie to the people like that. I'm not going to beat anyone.
Why am I going to play Jace the Mind Sculptor?
Because you're like, I want to play this card. It's super cool. And you're like, draw three.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, it's good enough. Yeah. I don't know, yeah, Michael.
If you're a parody, Jace wins every game.
Or ahead. It'd be fair. Any
sure. Yeah. I mean, every Planeswalker wins when you're already ahead. That's the secret.
Even Tybalt, Michael?
I don't even know what Tybalt does, so probably not.
All right, that's fair. All right, well, that's Card of the Week. So my understanding is that Card of the Week will be decided on the winner next week live, because it will be the last week of the month.
Yeah.
So next week you're going to find out if you're going to win Bloodbraid Elf, Galta, and the last one's on my phone. I want to say it's Mox Opal, but that's definitely wrong. I don't know.
I feel like it's not Mox Opal.
I feel like it was a card that was kind of expensive, though, but I don't know where it is.
I feel like Mox Opal is pushing it.
Yeah, I agree, but for some reason I thought it was that card. Maybe it's... I don't know. Who knows? It's a cool card.
You can win some Magic cards.
Exactly. And, I mean, Galt is the best. That's all that really matters. It's a 12-12 for GG. It's the best in Limited. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Tetsu Mach. But that one is really good, too.
It's so annoying when your opponent's, like, 5-drop, and then you're like, why does your 5-drop have 12 power? It's so unfair.
Yeah. That is very true. And you ramped to it by playing Magic. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So this week we're not doing any power rankings. So we were going to do Modern, and then we were like, oh yeah, that format's not a thing. And we did Standard last week, and not really anything happened over the weekend. So we're just going to do Deck of the Week, and we're going to be doing Green Black Snake. So, Michael, do you want to read this deck off to the people?
Sure. So it's 4 Walking Ballista, 4 Glintsleeve Siphoner, 4 Merfolk Branchwalker, 4 Whining Constrictor, 3 Jade Light Ranger, 2 Rishkar Pima Renegade, 3 Ravenous Chupacabra, 3 Verdurous Gearhulk, 3 Fatal Push, 2 Blossoming Defense, 2 Aethersphere Harvester, 2 Vraska's Contempt, 4 Aetherub, 4 Blooming Marsh, 4 Forest, 4 Foul Orchard, or 3 Foul Orchard, 2 Ash of Oasis, 2 Ishvanir Deadlands, 5 Swamp, and the sideboard is 4 Duress, 1 Fatal Push, 2 Golden Demise, 1 Vraska's Contempt, 1 Naturalize, 2 Deathcord Scavenger, 2 Vraska, 2 Life Corruption Beast Cherry.
So Michael, what do you think about this deck, and like, how would you summarize this deck and its game plan?
I do not like this deck, and I would summarize its game plan as play Whining Constrictor and pray it doesn't die.
So you are not, you clearly don't like this deck. So originally Spencer was going to take the lead on this deck, this deck of the week.
I assume Spencer likes this deck more than I do, but that's also not saying a whole lot. You probably like this deck more than I do too.
Well, I bought the cards and I was like, oh, I'm going to play this deck and give it a try. Because, you know, I talked about how I'm trying all these new decks. And I never did, because it was never that exciting to me. So I'm gonna try and do a thing in Magic that's harder, because it's very easy to not like a deck. I'm going to try and find things that I like about this deck. I'm going to try and talk about them and why we might want to play it.
Okay,
it's
so the
very
things
easy
I,
to get all, bag on a deck. Anyone can do
the
that.
The things I like about it is, especially when you're on the play, if you curve, or like mostly curve but also have a Blossoming Defense, mm-hmm. it's very much more like an aggro combo deck than just like a mid-range deck.
Yeah.
Right? If you're like Whining Constrictor into like Rishkar into Jade Light Ranger Blossoming Defense, your opponent is just dead.
Yep.
Like, you just made like 15 power on turn 4 and they're about to get wrecked.
I agree 100% with that. I also think this deck has a really... One of the things that these green-black snake decks have always done is they always have very powerful turn 2s. So Glintsleeve Siphoner is a powerful turn 2. Snake leads into powerful turn 3s. And Branchwalker is a passable Magic card.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Branchwalker. I have played with it a little bit in the red-green decks. And in those decks, I like it. I just like the explore cards all a little bit better because there are some things that provide value out of your graveyard.
Yeah.
So one of the things I don't like about Explore in this style of mid-range deck is that there's no way to bin anything for value. You also aren't a deck that requires a tremendous amount of lands.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of scrying, but
not
it's
really.
Much more scrying than actually like getting extra cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree on that point. I really like that the green-red deck can explore for value in a way, right? And like build a Kinra and be like later have a curve play. That's very
on
nice.
The flip side, I would imagine this deck is quite good against mono red. You have like all 9 spells, so 3 Fatal Push, 2 Blossoming Defense, 2 Aethersphere Harvester, and 2 Vraska's Contempt are outstanding against mono red. You're good at going over the top of them, and you're pretty good at blocking as far as that all goes. And then in boarding, you get another Vraska's Contempt, another Fatal Push, more Deathgorge Scavengers. So, like, I can imagine a metagame where I would want to play this deck, but the more open the metagame is, the less I'm into green-black.
So, in your mind, green-black is kind of like a weekend deck, right? Like, you would pick a weekend where you feel like it might be well-positioned and try and spike an event with it.
Yes. I think that, like, if you expect to play against mostly mono-red, I think this deck is really good against that deck. I think this deck is going to struggle with anything playing Fumigate. I think we've pretty well established that that's rough. I would guess this deck is okay, but not like great against tokens.
So this is very interesting. So you know I've played more tokens than I probably should have. Back in the day,
right.
Zombies was our best matchup, and Green Black was our second one. So my friend Trey still plays a lot of tokens, and he finally just got off the deck this last weekend. But the matchup actually got a lot worse, because what a lot of people are doing that this deck isn't doing, Michael, is they're playing some Vraska's main deck, and they have another Naturalize in the sideboard, and it actually becomes much harder. Because before, they would only have those cards for game 2 and 3, as you can just get through them, but now main deck, they actually have a way to beat you. And
the green-black deck snowballs so hard, and the tokens deck is so clunky at times that just, like, a combination of Walking Ballista and Verdurous Gearhulk can often, like, close, you know, oh, you have three or four blockers, but they all die and you take 15.
Yes, that happens a lot. So they got a lot of upgrades, so the matchup actually became much harder.
Yeah, I just know, having actually played both green, black, and tokens a little bit, I would imagine that matchup is, like, a lot more reasonable for green, black than it would be on the surface, especially because I think most of the tokens decks have basically cut Fumigate at this point.
Yeah.
They are that's because it's so bad against mono red. It is so bad. It doesn't do anything to Phoenix. It doesn't do anything to Hazred.
Yeah,
it doesn't do anything to Chandra. So it just doesn't solve any of your problems. It actually does nothing in that matchup.
Yeah, I was sideboarding them out as band approach. It was funny. I was like, well, I've got to get
which these doesn't sweepers. Make any sense, right? Yeah, yeah, you're like, oh, these sweepers are so bad against the go wide creature deck.
Yeah, instead I'll play this Regal Caracal and hope to trade a little, and that's not even good. So, yep. That's definitely something I agree with on that whole tokens and Fumigate front. Another thing I really like is this card, this deck gets to play, what is it called? I'm forgetting its name. Is that Artifact? Lifecraft Bestiary? That's a card I really like, and it's good in the matchups where it's good. But that's been my experience. I'm curious what you think about it, though.
So I think it's powerful, but I also think that any control deck with access to, like, a Braid or any of the bigger mid-range decks that might take a more controlling role with access to Abrades, like Grixis Energy, any kind of Grixis control deck, they're going to keep in all the Abrades they have. And my experience with Lifecrafter's Bestiary has always been that it is, like, remarkably fragile for a non-creature way to draw cards.
Mm-hmm.
In general, I think one of the biggest problems with this deck is that your game ones against spot removal decks just aren't very good.
Agreed.
You're basically trying to Blossoming Defense them out of the game, but you have to draw the right mix of creatures and Blossoming Defenses. And because you're more of a synergy deck, the right creatures have to actually live. So it's not just having a Blossoming Defense eventually; it's Blossoming Defensing in very specific spots. And I've just never been able to get that to work for me consistently.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. I feel like I love Blossoming Defense, but then whenever I'm, like, watching a league, watching someone plays, it seems like it never plays out the way I want it to.
It's incredibly powerful, but a lot of the time your opponent can sort of use it against you, where if your draw isn't phenomenal, it ends up kind of stone raining you, and they can actually win by using your own Blossoming Defense to slow you down. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but, like, I've definitely had that feeling before where you're, like, kind of priced into holding it up, but you have to play then a tap land or something, and now you, like, can't really continue to curve. Just things like that. Mm-hmm. It just ends up being surprisingly awkward, and it's so hard not to telegraph it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. So, yeah, even after talking about this deck and trying to stay positive on it, I'm not super high on it. But that being said, you know, I think there are definitely worse decks in Standard to be playing.
It's not my favorite, but I like playing Siphoner. I get why people have gone away from him, just because there are so many, like, fanatical Firebrands and Abrades, and, like, he just dies a ton. But that card is incredibly powerful if it stays in play. And I think that getting to play Aether Hub is probably quite good as well for this deck. It lets you realistically actually play, like, Jade Light Ranger and a Ravenous Chupacabra way more often.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. So that was our deck of the week. Once again, we are not going to be doing power rankings this week, just because Standard didn't really change that much. Michael doesn't really
Wear they're, Sweet they're Tech. Just, well, that's not true. I wish I had Sweet Tech to not give away.
Like that Sweet God Pharaoh's Gift deck? Huh?
Which one?
Oh, the Tarot. Danny showed me one that had, like, Saheeli Rai and Bomat Courier. And.
Oh, yeah. That deck was cool. I turn forward some people with that. Yeah.
Yeah, that deck was sweet.
I don't know. It wasn't good, but, like, it was cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. I should have had that up on the screen so we could talk about it, but whatever. That's a different day, different story. Feel free to message Michael at MagicMikeMTG on Twitter, and I'm sure he will talk about that.
Only don't message me about this deck because it's bad. Like,
okay.
You know, build it in your head, put Combat Celebrant in your deck, and there you go.
Yeah. It's a spicy one, that's all we can say. But we have got a pretty interesting training grounds that I'm excited to talk about. So let's just hop right into that. And so for the majority of the show here, And Michael, this training ground is about making time for yourself. So let's get down to it, Michael. Magic, they don't call it the grind because it, you know, it's super easy and you don't have to spend any time on it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely play like a lot, kind of an unreasonable amount of Magic.
Yeah, how much Magic do you think you play in a week, Michael? Like when preparing for an event?
A lot. Like, I mean, today I worked for about 8.5-9 hours, and then I already played most of a league, had some dinner, and recording this podcast, and will likely play 2 or 3 more leagues before going to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, I did the same thing. I worked, I came home, had some dinner. I actually recorded another podcast for Vanguard Stuff back in the day because they're having a big 100th episode. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to hopefully do 2 leagues before the night's done. So, yeah, so you, what do you think? You probably play like 25, 30 hours of Magic in a week leading up to a big event?
At least.
Yep.
So that's, I mean, I'd say 25, 30 hours just in an average week, probably more when more when it's really pushing up on something.
Yeah, so, I mean, a big part of that is playing every day and making time for that. Is that something that you find is kind of hard for you to do at times? Or, like, because how you do it, especially in a relationship, I think is an interesting thing for some people out there.
Yeah, so I try to back off when I'm really not feeling it. Like, the one thing I found is that trying to push through disinterest just generally makes you unhappy. If you're really not feeling it, I think it's totally fine to back off for a couple of days and just think about things instead. Like, sometimes I'm more interested in trying to, like, approach a new deck, or, like, think about what cards are really powerful in the decks that I'm struggling to beat, things like that, rather than just continuing to grind and grind and grind and grind when I don't feel like playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, like, you have to, like you said, you have to do things that work for you and work in your relationship and work, you know, with your work schedule and, you know, with your other hobbies, whatever those may be.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that kind of happens when you play a lot of Magic is that your other hobbies become much more relaxing in nature. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, most, you know, if Magic is your most serious hobby, I definitely agree with that. Like, it's my most serious hobby. So most of the other things I do, I really do just for fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, there are things I never do if I don't feel like it. There are things I don't put nearly as much effort into. There are things I just frankly don't care nearly as much about.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I've definitely found that. Sorry, just had a text from my boss there to read it for a second. But regardless, you know, when it comes to, like, work, it's something I have to pay a lot of attention to and do well when I'm doing it, you know, and I need to focus and take care of that. And then when I get to Magic, I have to do the same thing. So when I'm just relaxing, you know, and just watching TV, I'm really just only watching things I want to enjoy. And that, for me, honestly, like, if we're just talking about, like, the grind in general, my life is basically go to work, play Magic, and then relax watching a movie or a TV show. And work out. And that's basically all I do. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a big part of my life as well. One of the things that I try to do is, especially, I'm out of town a fair amount to play Magic. So when I am at home, I try to make sure I get some exercise, make sure I get enough sleep, make sure that I get, you know, enough time with my girlfriend that,
yeah, you know, I don't know how you do it with. I'm sorry, I forgot your girlfriend's name.
Hyann.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know how you do it with Hyann. I'm single and, like, there's almost no time.
Yeah, well, I you know, we make it work, and part of that is, you know, understanding that, like, we both have fairly intense things that we put a lot of time into, and, like, that's part of our relationship. But I think sort of understanding, like, that realistically you can play again tomorrow. Like, sometimes you just need to take some time off and, you know, work out or relax for the sake of your mental health or your happiness or the health of your relationship or really just anything else. And I think that a lot of your goals in Magic kind of have to come down to how much time you can really devote to it. Like, it's just really hard to play at a high level without devoting a large amount of time to Magic.
Yeah. Magic really does demand you all the time. I think it was, I'm curious to get your take on this. I think it was BBD. Someone messaged him and was like, how do you do it? You know, like you play all the time, you became the world champion, you grinded all this stuff. Like, how did you do it? And it's like, all I do is play Magic. Right? Because I think that essentially the quote of it was like, they were asking, how do you make time to do other things in your life? And he was just like, all I do is play Magic. And that doesn't have to be, I think, who you are. Because I don't think many people strive to be the world champion. I don't know if that's something, Michael, I don't know enough about your goals and stuff in Magic to know that. But, you know, that's like a really big commitment.
Yeah, and I think just like having a realistic understanding of what you can get out of your time, and also understanding that using your time efficiently is a big part of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have to play all day, every day to get substantially better.
Yeah.
Just like everything, right? If you want to, you know, if you want to win the Masters, first of all, you probably had to, you know, you'd become a golf prodigy at a younger age, but realistically, you know, that has to be basically all you do.
No, I agree.
100%. But if you want to merely be a good golfer, you probably don't need to only play golf.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you can say the same thing for Magic. You know, I think you can, excuse me, sorry, I got something caught in my throat there. I think you can, like, get to the RPTQ level, you do some decent finishes at GPs and stuff like that, and do other things in your life as well. And I think,
definitely.
I also think a big thing is that some people don't set realistic goals for themselves, and they... all they want is really to have success and win, if that makes sense. And so they put a lot of stress on themselves. And then because of that, they don't do things efficiently. They stress themselves out too much. They don't take the time off like you're talking about. And because of that, they burn out and they just don't succeed. Is that something that you've seen where you're from and whatnot?
Yeah, I see a little bit of that. I mean, honestly, I don't play locally very much anymore. But I think just having a realistic understanding and grasp of where you're at in Magic makes sense, but also in addition to that, like, not just having a grasp on where you're at, but having ideas on how to get better, because the truth is that, like, no matter how much you prepare for an event in the month before it, you can't really make yourself a dramatically better Magic player in a month.
Agreed.
Right? So, like, a lot of what you're trying to do is sort of scratch and claw and get ever so slightly better at just actually playing Magic. And over time, you don't necessarily need to devote quite as much time to maintaining the level, like most things, right? Once you've sort of achieved something, it's easier to do it again.
Exactly.
Right? If you already were very good, it's easier to get back to that level. And some of that is knowing how hard you have to work, but some of it is also knowing that, like, it's just easier to achieve a level you've already achieved. It's always hard to make progress.
Yeah, I really like that. And, you know, that's why, like, whenever I'm on the show, I feel like I always bring this up, and I wish I had more to offer, but I really do believe it. You know, it's not about winning and stuff like that. It's about improving at Magic and playing the best you can because of what Michael's saying, right? Like, you can't become, you know, probably good enough to win a GP in 1 month. But if you keep practicing, you keep playing, right, and you get better and better, your chances go up, and you just consistently do better. And that is a big part of it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is separating good play mm-hmm. from results.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes. I love that so much. Do you want to delve into that a bit more?
Yeah, I think just, like, ultimately – good play and results are, they're correlated, but they're not necessarily caused, right? Like, it's not, your good plays don't always lead to winning, but you're always going to win more if you're playing well.
Yep, 100%.
And I think that sort of understanding the difference really helps in terms of, it will help you not only play better, but it'll help you be, it helps give you control over how you feel about your play.
That's what I was about to say, happiness. So I'm glad you got
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, I mean, obviously you're happier when you're winning. I think that's natural and reasonable, and I certainly wouldn't expect anyone to, you know, be smiling the whole time you're getting crushed. Like, that's fine. I don't think that's a reasonable thing to expect. But by making play a priority versus just results, you just have a lot more control, right? Like, if I make all the right decisions and I'm happy with my prep and I'm happy with my deck choice and I mulligan to four a bunch of times, that's, you know, that can just be freak variance. But if I'm playing well, I expect to mostly do well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I always say this, you know, whenever someone complains about getting mana screwed or they mulligan a bunch and they tell me, it's like, well, you knew the game you were signing up to play. You know that this happens sometimes, and more often than not, you know, that doesn't really happen. So I'm sorry that today sucked, but, you know, going forward, probably won't be that way. So let's just move on and focus on what we can focus on, right?
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you find yourself mulliganing a bunch, you sort of have to decide, okay, is it possible that I'm, like, mulliganing sevens too aggressively? Is it possible that maybe I need to play more or less lands or a different color composition? Like, right, I mean, there's more that goes into it than just recognizing variance and trying to let it go. You have to figure out, you know, is this actually just variance or am I contributing to this in some way? But yep.
Sorry.
I think that just in terms of attitude, sort of brushing variance off a little bit goes a long ways.
I agree 100%. But let's talk about our rules for traveling. So, Michael, you know, last week on this show, Spencer talked about how he will just drive to any GP that I think was like 10 hours away. If it's 10 hours, Spencer's going. He doesn't care if it's limited, popper, commander 1v1, he's going. So...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, for example, you're flying into Memphis. I mean, you get to hang out with me, so that's, I understand that's why you're really going. There's like a GP or whatever.
Definitely.
But, well, you know, what are your, like, rules of travel when it comes to Magic?
Well, it depends on where you live, but here in Salt Lake, basically any Grand Prix that costs, like, $200 or less for a plane ticket, I just buy.
Yep.
I think
that's very reasonable.
I'm not in a financial position to always buy them way in advance, so sometimes it's a little bit tricky, but I will basically go to every Grand Prix that is within 2 hours.
$200 for 2 hours?
Or $200, yeah.
You're definitely...
I wish, yeah.
Yeah.
Within that budget. And that, for me, is about the point where over a sample of about the last... like year and a half, I have been able to basically break even on anything under that.
Mm-hmm.
And anything over that, it starts getting a little dicey.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's super reasonable. It's like, because you do have to, you know, we're talking about making time for yourself and doing the grind stuff. But part of that, the whole making time for yourself, is making sure you're not spending too much money and you're being reasonable with your expectations and having clear guidelines. I really like that you're like, well, you know, I'm trying to hit silver/gold, and that means if something costs $200 or less to get there, I'm going to go play that format and do the best I can and work towards doing that. So,
yeah, well, and I think the secret is that, like, a lot of getting, especially silver, is just volume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, you need to be doing reasonably well at these events or whatever, but it's very, very difficult to get silver from, like, zero Pro Tour invites without just playing a ton of events.
Yeah, I mean,
so it's crazy. The only way you're gonna, like, you can't top 8 an event you don't play, right? I think I said that last week, but, like,
true.
You can't win. You can't achieve your goals by not playing. So, I think that, like, in terms of, you know, in terms of wanting your sanity, in terms of, you know, wanting your relationships to be successful, in terms of wanting you to be good at your job, in terms of wanting to be in good physical health, I totally understand not wanting to you know, devote all your time and money or whatever, all your effort to Magic. But at the same time, you know, when you want to succeed at the highest level, then you're sort of priced into trying really hard, right?
I was about to say you're priced into it. Yeah. You know, if you really want to do well and you really want to play like multiple pro tours, you want to hit silver and stuff like that, it's like Michael said, if you're not already going to pro tours, it's very hard to get silver. I mean, if you play every pro tour in the year, right? If you, let's say you just had them, that's 12 pro points. So you only need 8, and you probably got some to get there. So once you get on it, you know, that's why they talk about getting on the train, you know, is so important. So once you're gold and you hit all the pro tours, it becomes a lot easier.
Once you're gold, it's a lot easier to get gold again.
Yeah. Which is kind of weird. It makes sense when you really think about it, right?
Sure. I mean, gold also gets you an extra buy at every Grand Prix, so, like, that ties into it.
Pay to win pros, I see.
Yes, no, that's the only reason they're good.
Yeah.
It's the only reason. Other than that, they'd be, you know, missing day two like everyone else.
Yep, exactly. And PV's never done it. Every GP he goes to, he crushes them all. Same for Luis. But let's talk about, you know, we talked about it a little bit there a second ago, but let's talk about physical health and magic. Is that something that you, like, try and prioritize, like, making sure that you get exercise in and whatnot? I mean, I see a lot of studies about using exercise, you feel better and think
so
better.
I definitely try to get some exercise, but I also don't really know that this is the right place to lecture people about exercise. You know, I understand that basically, you know, we're all trying to live as healthy as we can, but you know, it's challenging to eat well, and it's challenging to find time for exercise, and
especially at Magic tournaments, it's hard to eat well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Magic tournaments likely, you know, mostly consist of being a professional sitter.
Yeah,
I spend a lot of time sitting on planes, and a lot of time sitting in convention halls, and a lot of time sitting on my computer playing Magic online. So, you know,
sounds like you need a standing desk, Michael.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I do. Maybe I need a treadmill desk.
Have you thought about getting a standing desk, like, real talk?
No.
Not at all?
But I'm also, like, you know, I'd have to buy one, which is, like, a pretty big deterrent.
What if we got you a standing desk? Would you use it?
I don't know. I've never used a standing desk before. It's hard to say for sure.
It's pretty great.
Do you have one?
A coworker has one, and I've used it. Like, I stood there and, like, you know, I had to, like, mess around their stuff for a while. I liked it. It was fine.
Yeah, it seems like it might be nice at work. I haven't used one in that context.
I guess the context of Magic Online would be different.
Yeah, well, I don't know how long. Maybe it's better. I couldn't really tell you. All
right. Well,
I'll just stand up sometimes when I'm playing Magic Online, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Love it. I love it. So let's talk about mental health, though, when it comes to Magic. And I think what Spencer was talking about with this was really, like, staying off tilt and making sure you're playing with your time efficiently, like we talked about before. Is that something that you find yourself doing a lot? Like, if you get frustrated or whatnot because of some bad variants, you, like, step away for a while? Or how do you, like, handle all of this?
I don't know. I'm pretty good at not tilting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not really something I struggle with basically ever at all.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a lot of advice for, like, getting better at not tilting besides stop it.
Yeah, so I'm kind of the same. I when I was younger, I had issues with it, I think. And then as I got older, it hasn't become that big of a problem. But my friend Trey always has this story that he likes to tell, and I think it will be helpful for some people, so I'm going to tell it.
Okay.
So his mom used to be a nurse, and she would come back and, you know, she'd be pretty, like, worn out and tired, and Trey would, like, talk to her and ask about her day and stuff, and she would tell stories about, you know, kids dying and these, like, injuries. From my understanding, she worked in, like, the trauma unit. So, I mean, you know, skewed results, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but it was traumatic.
It was traumatic, exactly.
That's why it was called the trauma unit.
Exactly. Perfect. I'm glad we got there together. We did it. But regardless, you know, they come back every day, and then sometimes she would have hard days and she would lose it, but she would try and focus on the things that matter to her in her life and try and stay on the positive stuff, especially when she was home. And then he sees people who play Magic and they're freaking out about drawing the third Stomping Grounds in a row, right? And it's just like, what are you doing with your life, right? Like, there are more important things out there to be concerned about and worried about. And if the worst thing that happened to you today, you know, is you drew the third Stomping Grounds in a row when all you needed was a spell to trigger Chandra's emblem to kill them, I think you have a pretty great life and should really keep that kind of stuff in perspective. So I say all that to say, just keep it in perspective, right? It's a game. It's something we all really try on. We spend a lot of time, you know, Michael just talked about it, spending 30 plus hours a week playing Magic. It's easy for these things to get emotional, but you see that, like, Michael does a good job of keeping a calm head and he has success from that, right? So if you find yourself struggling with tilt, I would say kind of take perspective, you know?
Yeah, I think, too, it's like you can acknowledge being unlucky without being
tilted,
unreasonably upset.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you, like, I'm not asking you to say, you know, I'm not asking you to say, like, oh, yeah, I drew my third Stomping Ground in a row, and I, you know, couldn't have possibly lost if I drew a spell. But, like, you know, what are you going to do about it? Like, that's Magic. If you want to play something else, go play chess.
Exactly, yeah. It goes back to that whole thing where it's like you signed up knowing that you could never draw a spell the entire tournament. It's very, very unlikely. But you could, you know, mulligan to like three every game, never see any spells.
Yeah, you could literally never draw a spell. Or like, obviously, yeah. Things are, you know, incredibly unlikely, but
yeah,
I just think that, like, you're playing a game with variance, and variance is what makes Magic fun, in my experience, right? Like, it makes it interesting, and it makes your evaluation of the board change turn to turn. Like, if, like, a lot of what's Magic, what makes the game interesting is variance. So sometimes it's going to bite you, sometimes it's going to bite your opponent, but most of the time, even in a given match, it mostly evens out.
Yep, I agree 100%. I mean, Hearthstone uses variance in the cards all the time because they try and create this exciting moments. It's very similar in Magic and the mana system and everything like that. But that's a conversation for a different training grounds, Michael. So, Michael, so my understanding is you work at Oasis Games, correct? Proud sponsor of Constructive Criticism.
That is true.
So how does... You have a very interesting work environment, right? Because for you, your boss, I believe, was a silver pro or...
He is silver.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. So, like, he kind of gets it. So is it hard for you to relate to the Magic life balance there? Like, you're in a very weird position. Like, I'm trying, you know what I mean? Like, your experience is not the average experience.
Right. No, I mean, that's, I get that for sure. So, like, it just depends on how present you have to be in your work, right? Like, I think compartmentalization is something we all do with varying levels of effectiveness, but something we all try to do here and there. So, you know, if you have to compartmentalize for the sake of your physical, mental health, your work balance, your relationships, whatever, that's the thing you got to get good at. Just it's just another skill.
So time off for stuff and travel, I think, is what Michael was, I think it was what Spencer was getting at, Michael. Is that, do you find that Alex is a reasonable, understanding boss when it comes to that kind of stuff? Like, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, obviously, it's not hard for me to get time off, but I think that's true of a lot of, you know, if you're working a job like I'm working, then it's probably pretty easy for you to get time off. Like, the more necessary it is for you to be at work, the harder it is to get time off. That's just going to be mostly factual.
Yeah. It is not easy for me to get time off work. So I definitely understand that. Yeah. And as for myself, it means, you know, I guess I'll try and answer
it, this. It just means you have to plan, right?
Yeah, you have to plan and balance.
It just takes planning.
Yeah, definitely.
It just takes planning. Most everyone can get time off as long as they have enough notice and, you know, can work around it.
Yep.
Just like you would with any other kind of vacation. If you want to take a trip to play Magic, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. 100%. So, I think we've already talked about the next one Spencer want to talk about in relationships. Is there anything you'd really want to say about that, especially for someone who might be in a relationship? I can't really help here, but...
No, I mean, just, you know, be reasonable.
Yeah, I think that's like an underlining message in this whole thing. It's like, you have to put in some time, right? But when it comes to, like,
be a reasonable human being.
Yeah. Just be a reasonable
I mean,
person.
it's kind of a disappointing answer, but it's kind of true, right? Like, you mostly just pushing yourself really hard at the detriment of the people around you, at the detriment of your ability to work, at the detriment of, you know, your relationships is really unhealthy and will probably make you unhappy in the long run. So, you know, try to find balance. Relax when you want to relax. Play Magic when you want to play Magic. Just play Magic intelligently and focus on getting better.
Yep, I agree. I think that's a good wrap-up for the show. So thank you so much, Michael, for coming on. Remember, if you want to support the show, you can become a patron at patreon.com/constructedcriticism. Just a reminder, we did split off LTO from Constructed Criticism, so if you like limited time only, and that's why
you're a patron. I think it's just under CCMTG.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'm so sorry.
I think
CCMTG. He's going to check that for me real quick. One of the two. But
it's just under CCMTG.
All right, so CCMTG. So LTO is probably LTO as well. On Patreon, if I had to guess. So if you are a patron of the show because of LTO, we just want to let you know, like, we've separated that stuff to make sure that the money's going to places you actually want it. And I just want to remind
LTO
people that
is under limited time only.
Of course it is. All right. So it's under
limited. No, I actually don't know what it's under. Maybe it's under LTO MTG.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I just knew that, of course, I would say one
thing.
Yeah,
it's under LTO MTG.
Okay, LTO MTG. So you can go there if you want to do that. And we wanted to give a big shout-out once again to the Mana Base. We like to poke fun at certain Merfolk players and myself. The time's coming, Michael. Eventually, I'll be at an event with him, and we'll get paired. But it's to the point where people are tagging me in his posts. It's getting intense, Michael.
That's really sweet. I love that. I'm glad you guys have a rivalry despite having like never actually played.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I love this. I like
your Twitter call-out was really good.
Thank you.
I think we should just have more Twitter call-outs in general. I think it would dramatically improve the quality of life in this country.
I mean, Owen basically does it all the time to the Magic community. Whenever there's a team event, he's like, let's show him who runs these streets. Just like every time. It's great.
Yeah, when you tweet it for like the 11th time, it's like, okay.
Maybe I have more fun with it than Michael does. Or maybe it's because Owen just crushes Michael all the time.
I don't think I've ever played Owen, but, you know,
You've never beaten Owen? That's why he runs those streets, Michael. You gotta get in there.
Exactly. Gotta get paired against him first. It hasn't worked out that well so far.
Exactly. Have you seen Black Panther?
Not yet.
All right, you need to challenge his royal bloodline. You'll understand that later. Okay. Wakanda forever. All right, so let's move on to hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good. It's our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, this would normally be the point when Spencer says, Mason, hop on the mic for some reason, and I would have to read it. So let's get up here. And I believe I was taught to use latest last time. Is that right? Is that the way to do it? Is that how you do it?
Yeah.
All right. So a week ago, I think, would be... here we go. I found it. All right. So the hashtag would that be good.
This is Spencer tweeting about
the podcast.
Yeah, about Lotus Cobra Primeval Titan.
Yeah. And so I think the reason about this was that you were dumping on Lotus Cobra
last week. Yeah, I kept making fun of Lotus Cobra, and then finally, you know, someone managed to 5-0 a league with Lotus Cobra in their deck, and Spencer was really excited about it.
So can we be real now that Spencer's not heel here? Lotus Cobra is almost assuredly not better than Sakura Tribe Elder in this list.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's not almost assuredly, it's just not.
Love it. Boom, Gauntlet Throne, Spencer. You have to be on your own show if you want to defend it. All right. Andrew Elliott tweets, spamming my wife with I love you messages and Valentine's Day posts on Facebook. We promise not to buy each other presents outside of Black Panther tickets. And he added Olive Garden for some reason, but not Black Panther, which was weird to me. But whatever, for dinner. Little does she know, she's got a dozen roses waiting for her and chocolate. Hashtag, would that be good?
Olive Garden's Twitter replied to this, which is...
Wait, did they?
Weird. Like, really weird.
That's so sweet. Well, they sponsor PV, so they might know.
Yeah, so the question is, do they now follow Andrew?
Oh, that's the real question. I bet they did. I don't know. But here's the
so
real
weird.
Would that be good, Michael.
Man, running, like, the Olive Garden Twitter account would be so, so weird.
Have you seen the Wendy's one? Oh, Michael hasn't seen the Wendy's Twitter. I can tell
you. I mean,
his face.
I've seen some of that stuff, but.
Your job is basically to roast people without getting in trouble. Like, that's basically all she does.
Yeah, like, do you think that that's a full time job?
Oh, yeah.
That's her only job?
I think so.
Do you think she got hired? What was the interview like?
So we know who.
It just seems weird.
So we know who it was a year ago because the person who did it. Left, and they have a new person doing it now. I know this because it was on Reddit, and someone shared that, like, this lady updated her resume, and she was the Twitter manager for Wendy's from, like, 2014 to 2017. So she got in there. I imagine she was like, let's try and be sassy, and then they're like, I guess, and then it just worked. And so she was like, I'm sassy all the time now. So
that sounds great.
Yeah. Let's see. At Scotty... Paresco tweets, in Vegas till Sunday for the World Sign Spinning Competition? Whoa. Kind of want to find a place to play FNM. Hashtag would that be good. Hashtag priorities. Hashtag wrong cards in Vegas. World Sign Spinning Competition. Is Scott a World Sign Spinner competitor?
I couldn't tell you. I don't really know what that would look like. Gosh. I'm also not going to look it up on YouTube.
My mind... So I'm imagining, and I'm sorry if this is wrong, Scott, like the people on the side of the road who spin their signs, and they're like, pizza over here!
Yeah, but like better.
But like infinite. Is this like the Olympics? Oh my gosh. I'm gonna add
can
Scott
you,
after
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you can win a medal, maybe.
That'd be so good. All right. We have Nathan Kaiser. I know this guy. What's up, Nathan? He tweeted, I finished my playset of Lilianas. Hashtag, would that be good? With a picture of two Lilianas and the goat, Michael Hinderrocker, and the dragon, Spencer Hatlin tokens.
I feel like your opponent is not going to let you cast either of those tokens as a Liliana, but if you can get them to do it, more power to you.
I think what really happened is he ordered his token. He ordered from Oasis Games and got the tokens, Michael.
Oh,
so
I liked
only
it.
Needed to.
No,
he
no,
liked
no.
it better when you're Liliana.
I liked it better when he was going to try to play the tokens as Lilianas.
Yeah.
That was funnier to me. But,
so,
you know.
I used you in battle with my fascinating token, and someone was like, who is that? And I was like, got him.
Perfect.
You're
That's
getting your
what
name
I like to
there.
Hear. Don't get my name out there. My name is not worth having out there.
We already talked about how powerful Hinderocker is. I have to vent, and this one's me. Soapbox time, Michael. It's 7 p.m. going to the last round of Swiss. Hashtag, would that be good? Michael, this PPTQ started at 2 p.m.
Why? They just, like, never run a PPTQ before?
Correct. It was their first PPTQ.
Okay.
And
then you get a pass.
You would get a pass if not for what's about to happen, Michael.
Oh.
The lighting in there, and the only way I could describe it is like if Applebee's was trying to set the mood on Valentine's Day. It was literally the worst. I had to adjust the lighting. I like couldn't see my cards at a time. And
that's great.
Because Applebee's is the master of not being the best. Hashtag
wait,
at me Applebee's.
Wait. Was Nathan playing tokens as Liliana's at that event?
No. Nathan wasn't at that. Nathan lives in a different part of the state. But
I was good. I mean, that seems like the prime opportunity.
Yeah, you're like, I'll play this Liliana, tick up. You're like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, don't worry about it. It's a Liliana. But the lighting they had wasn't consistent across the room. And part of that is that where the table numbers just landed, tables 1 through 4 had better lighting than everyone else.
Oh, man, that's some incentive.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm into that.
Yeah. So when I snuck in the top 8 on like 0.01 breaker, like absurdity, and I was 8th to 1st, so I had table 1, and I beat him, and I just called seedsies. I was like, not moving. I need to be able to see my cards.
Perfect. That just sounds like a good time.
All right, so we got some drama. Are you ready for this, Michael? Andrew Elliott, at Spencer Howland, hashtag would it be good, and it is a response to Riley Knight, best commentator in the world, don't at me about it, eating his pizza crust first.
I'm not really that into pizza drama. Do what you want.
Michael, I need to know. Crust first or crust second? Answer it.
I mean, probably second, just like because it's less messy that way. But yeah, like,
I feel like it's hard to
pizza. I just don't really have that strong opinions in general about what people eat, how they eat their pizza or what they put on it. Like, we're kind of back to the, you know, like tilting thing. This I just not
Michael.
Gonna
this doesn't get worked
easily.
Up about anything.
It is not. It's just not that upsetting.
So I'm not. So I'm going to hang out with you a lot outside of the show environment. But a little behind the scenes current news. Michael definitely amps his voice up in excitement for the show, but comparative to before the show, because we're like talking about decks before the show, and it's like very monotone, very much like, yeah, I mean, I guess Vraska is a card in the deck. Yep. And it's just like he's on the show and he's much more loud and excited. And I'm not sure if that's how you're like all the time, or you just hate me, or where we're at, but
no, like nah. Like well, okay, first of all, I am always really tired on Monday nights.
That's fair.
So this is always kind of the struggle. But I also try to talk louder and more excitedly because I mean It probably makes for better content, if we're being totally honest.
Yeah, definitely does.
But, you know, it also, it just depends. I'm
excited.
I can be an excitable person at times, but I am also naturally not, my baseline excitement level is relatively low. I'll just put it that way.
So I'll report back to the CC family after hanging out on a weekend with Michael. I'll know the truth after this weekend because you're going to be staying in my hotel room. And we're gonna get you some good Memphis barbecue. Do you like barbecue?
Well, I do like barbecue. Yes.
All right. So we're gonna go get. Apparently, Trey knows all the food places in Tennessee, and apparently, there's like good price, really good barbecue down there. So we're going on Saturday. So
sweet. That sounds.
I will gauge your excitement level then. Andrew Elliott for our last tweets. I don't know why, but I'm literally lolling at Mason E. Clark getting a Bojangles gift card as part of his prize pool. I guess I'm just easily amused. So,
but that's just like actually funny. That's so bizarre.
Yeah, I got it right here in this box. I had my 24 packs, and it, by the way, we didn't get done until like 10:30, so I didn't want to deal with like waiting cards out. So I was like, I'll take the packs. You got me this time. But I look in it as we're driving home, and I'm like, I have a Bojangles gift card, and I thought. Maybe someone accidentally put their Bojangles gift card. Incorrect. Everyone on Top 8 got a Bojangles gift card.
That's fantastic. Ooh. I'm in for that, man.
My mind's just blown. Like, hey, you didn't get through the RPDQ, but Bojangles is a proud sponsor of this PPDQ.
I mean...
God dang. If you don't know what Bojangles is, it's like a terrible chicken place, by the way. So,
but like, I appreciate the effort. It's like, sorry about the lighting, sorry about the start time. Here's a Bojangles gift card. I'm into that.
$5. You can get any iced tea you want. Thank you, everyone.
Oh, so much whining.
It was the worst. They also gave me a shirt, Michael, for second place. That was the other thing. They're like, hey, you didn't win. Here's a memory of not winning. Here you go. Take the shirt.
That's great.
Wear it around.
Hopefully they'll learn from it and do better next time.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for watching. I had a blast. It's always fun, Michael. And we'll see you, amigos, next week.